Welcome to
2 o'clock with Kella.
Bring your tea
and leave with more.
Welcome back to part two of our book club episode, where we'll be talking through the next five questions in our book club. We hope you enjoy.
Okay, Ella, is it time for our next question?
Yeah, I think it's your turn.
Is it? Oh. Yeah.
Oh, I enjoyed that gentle nudge, though.
Oh, I'm thrown by the you haven't gone already. Okay, yeah. So, what book are you currently raving about to everyone who will listen? And Ella Metcalf.
That is a good question. I was thinking of like repeating the same answer that I've had for like a year straight. I was going to talk about my dissertation books, which are the only books on my mind at the moment, The Overstory and Moby Dick, which are cool and interesting and do cool things. Actually, I really do enjoy Moby Dick. But then I remembered a book that I read as further reading for my Irish Stories module a couple of weeks ago called The Third Policeman. And in it, as well as this bloke essentially dying in the first like 50 pages of it, and then like going around the Irish countryside as a sort of like as a ghost, not really achieving many things, and not realizing that he's a ghost. It's also the book that's just filled with the absurd. For example, he spends a lot of time walking around with a policeman who completely and utterly believes the idea that people turn into bicycles and bicycles turn into people. It's a bicycle one. It's the one that I've just been telling everyone about because I was so crazed by it. Essentially, the guy has the idea that he knows about atoms and that they make up objects, and he has this idea if objects hit each other, then like a tiny amount of their atoms like transfer between them. And that means that if you, you know, spend a long time kind of interfacing, hitting the same object like your bicycle, you know, over 30 years of your life, then like 50% of your atoms become bicycle atoms, and more importantly, 50% of the bicycle becomes human atoms. And they're still in bicycle shapes and human shapes, but just with new bicycle characteristics. A lot of people can't stay still for too long or they fall over, for example.
That's hilarious.
So that was a bit of joy.
That was very entertaining.
Module, yeah.
What about you, George?
Well, Secret History, isn't it? I finished it a couple of weeks ago, and I honestly could not get enough of it. I feel like I was explaining this to Carrie last week. There was a me before I read The Secret History, and there's a me after I read The Secret History, and they are now different people. Because everything about it was so exciting and enthralling, and one of my colleagues at work has now started reading it. Win, because I kept going on at them about how good it was.
What's it actually about?
So the narrator, who I edgily compare to Nick Carraway from The Great Gatsby.
Interesting.
He basically goes to college, Hampton College in America, and he what he's studying has got a very limited and small group of people, and it basically follows this group of people through the academic so much more that happens. It's 600 and something pages. It doesn't feel like that. It's not a slog to get through. At least I didn't find it was a slog to get through. And now I'm after any book that does something similar, which I have found. Apparently there's one that's basically they're all on like a Shakespeare course that follows a similar vein. so I might check that out. But yeah, The Secret History. I mean, I know Kerry and Ella, you've both read it, so I'm preaching to the converted already.
And we do have a podcast episode on it as well, so
yes.
Head back into the archives and find that one. I think series 2, we did a Secret History episode.
I did scroll through when I was looking, because I recently listened to your Good Nurse podcast episode. But now, Ella M, you are the only one who hasn't read it, and therefore you're the target audience.
I study Greek.
That's so exciting.
I feel like that kind of side of you, your classic side, will absolutely love it.
I'll be a nerd. Just anything that gets me closer to Percy Jackson.
Yeah, I know.
So yeah, that's the book I'm raving about to anyone and everyone.
Yeah, that's fun. Kerry, what about you?
Is it not Ella? I'm losing track now.
I don't know. No. We can fight it out. Okay, I'll go. Sorry. Typical university student doing her dissertation. Everyone should read Hangover Square. Patrick Hamilton deserves more recognition. Love the man. Okay, yeah, he was a troubled man. Isn't everyone.
I mean, wasn't.
But Hangover Square, I think is... Okay, I'm biased because I'm writing my dissertation on it. But I think it's such an interesting look into both London in 1939, but kind of like gritty, dark, seedy, kind of underbelly sort of side of London. The premise is about a schizophrenic murderer called George Harvey Bone, who basically he goes into these dead moods where he's like, I have to kill this woman.
Whoa.
And he's obsessed with her.
Joe from You.
A little bit of a fascist, along with her friends. So there's lots of like fun political stuff in it as well. Without very explicitly ever talking about the war or whatever. But I think it's a really interesting insight into his mind and London at the time.
This is such a stupid thing to say, but I didn't realise that you enjoyed Hangover Square so much. I knew you were interested by it and like talking about it.
No, I really enjoyed it. And I've read a few of Patrick Hamilton's other stuff as well. He's definitely got this like a very clear kind of style and tone and voice and subject matter. But it's really interesting. So
I think I might have to check that out, because I feel like we like quite similar books.
Yeah, and I feel like for Hamilton, he's been neglected. People read Graham Greene and Henry Greene and Elizabeth Bowen and all the other people who are writing. Evelyn, what's his face? But like people forget about Patrick, but a lot of people enjoyed his work back in the day. So I say that one. But also, as you know from our episode a couple of weeks ago, also raving about Stoner to anyone and everyone who will listen and think that you should read that one. But you can check out our entire episode about that. Constant plugging today.
Really?
Yeah. Anyway, Kerry, what's your recommendations?
I was thinking about Stoner as well, but then I did think, we did just do a whole episode on it. So I've opted for Old Godot's Dreaming by Chichil, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, Gonzalez, which I did mention in one of the What We've Been Consuming recently. And I love it so much because it's a really good example of lit fic done right. Well, I guess it's more like contemporary fic, but I love that it's, you can't really define what it's about, but like a lot does happen in it. It's got multiple characters, multiple perspectives. It's set in New York. It's not really a romance, but there's romantic relationships in it. It's kind of political, but not in your face political. And there's a lot of stuff in it about like Puerto Rican independence and what happened with the hurricane. And there's a lot to do with like gay rights, but there's nothing in it that like whacks you over the head and is very like, whoa, like issues, think about it. But like it does make you think about humanity generally speaking, but it is a really good read, like super entertaining. And I just constantly like, I just couldn't put it down. It's so good, it's so evocative. I mean, I love anything set in New York anyway, but it's just I just cannot praise it anymore. Like, it's just the best ever. And I haven't really said much about what it's about, but like, you just can't really, but it's just really good. So you just have to take my word for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I trust your judgments.
Yeah. Thank you.
Definitely very clever lady.
Thanks. Oh, she's a wedding planner as well. So it's like low key, like J-Lo is a wedding planner, which I love.
I wondered if you were going to reference that film.
I feel like you've semi linked onto our next question quite well. You're saying that you love anything set in New York.
Yeah.
And our next question isn't really place based, but it's time based. I don't know what that was. Anyway, the question is, what's your favourite time period to read, either publication date or setting? And can you recommend something from this era? So, I've now forgotten who we start. I think we start with George.
Yeah.
Yes, I think so. So, I think generally, historical is quite fun, because I'm also quite a fan of non-fiction, which tends to be about historical events. I had the realisation when I was thinking about my answer that I very rarely read books set / written in the 21st century. Which was not something that I'd realised about myself, but then I look back of what I've read, say, in the last year, and very little of it was 21st century. I also found it hard because I read a lot of fantasy, which obviously is in its own time period or kind of time region, despite being usually like medieval Renaissance influence, but it's a bit messy. So I actually, getting to the point, realise I think my best answer to say is that the books I read that were written in a certain time period and usually set is 20th century books, maybe dipping into 19th century. So I thought as an early to mid 20th century read, I'd recommend Frenchman's Creek, as I will plug Daphne du Maurier whenever I get the opportunity. And it is a beautiful book. It's just beyond stunning. And I feel like I just need to post everyone a copy of it. I don't even care.
I have been waiting, to be fair. Where is it?
Yeah. The thing is, I'm not just going to buy you your own copy and you can pass it out. And then for a late 20th century read, I thought maybe Neverwhere by Neil Gaiman.
Good shout.
So yeah, basically 20th century writing that's either set in the 20th century or set in the past.
I enjoy that.
Ella M, what do you think?
Good question. I got struck by a different book. You would usually, so I read quite a lot of fantasy, which again is often set in kind of medievally inspired times, or, you know, even back to like quite ancient myth time settings. And then also I enjoy a lot of urban fantasy, which is sort of anything. It tends to be stuff set in a world that looks a lot like our own, but just like with magic involved, essentially. Which I enjoyed as a teenager, but most of all, I'm quite a fan of a bit of a space opera, actually, or just sort of any sci-fi with a bit of guns and spaceships and whatever bit of fancy technology.
You should read Do Robots Then Dream of Electric Sheep? Or is it Do Electric Sheep?
I was meant to read that.
I think it's Robots.
Do Robots Dream of Electric Sheep? And then I can force you to watch Blade Runner with me. If you like these sorts of books,
I've watched Robots Blade Runner Dream of Electric Sheep 2045, and it was
2049.
Whatever its face is just being mean, and I didn't enjoy it.
That's because you can't just watch 10 minutes of a film and give up on it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
domestic.
Sorry, I'm talking about sci-fi. What I'd recommend is the one I've read most recently, which is called the
Blood Trials. It's something, it's written by someone, hang on, N.E. Davenport, and it's about someone with, it's got that fun little kick of someone with like secret forbidden magic, and so she's special, but also
best genre.
Yeah, in a world in the future. And it's also quite clever. It's written by a woman of colour, and it's got like a lot of thought into different countries on this continent and race and stuff like that. So it was a fun and interesting read.
Carrie.
I realised that I only really like books that are set in the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like them. It's all about lockdown, as our listeners well know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So yeah, anything contemporary, really. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, I was gonna say like I wouldn't mind late 20th century, but I don't know, because George kind of counted that as historical fiction, and I would say I don't like historical fiction. Anything that's like recognizably recent / nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And my recommendation would be The Book of Love by Fionnuala Kearney, hope I said that right, which I made Ella, well, I didn't make, but I strongly suggested that Ella should read it.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a love story without being cringy or cliche, and it doesn't end, well, because most romance novels I feel like end when the couple get together or they get married or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But this is more so after they get married, what happens, and it is a really nice life story, you know. So even if you don't like romance books, I highly recommend.
Yeah.
What about you, Ella?
I'm quite on the kind of opposite side to you. I currently haven't been reading much 21st century stuff. I am forever a sucker for a Victorian book. Whether it is written by a Victorian or just set in the Victorian era, I know it wasn't a great time in the world, but there's something about it that I just love and really enjoy. And I guess a recommendation of, I guess, a book which is set in the Victorian era but written more modern, I don't know whether, I think it might be 21st century, is The Watchmaker of Filigree Street by Natasha Pulley. I think beautiful looking book as well. It's been a while since I read it, but I remember really enjoying it. It was one that my dad picked up at the airport for me once when he was coming back from somewhere, and he was like, oh, I saw this and I thought you might enjoy it. I remember reading it and really enjoying it. We'll probably have to reread it to properly remember it, but set in the Victorian times, based around a watchmaker.
Wow.
Which is fun. But yeah, that's like a really bad way of selling that book to anyone. But yeah, anything.
I feel the charm of the Victorian era is that it's like far away enough that it's got this like whole horse carriage gowns historical net charm, but then it's like near enough that you still kind of feel slightly connected to it.
Yeah, exactly. And with all the advances in technology and everything else,
what's it called?
Kind of straddling what feels like past and present and modern. Not modern. I think it's an era of contradictions.
Yeah,
lots of kind of good flashing ideas and ways of thinking about things. Right, okay. Next question, Carrie.
Is there anything you won't read, for example, like a particular genre? Do you have any examples? This kind of thing, beginning with Ella.
Yeah, I don't have a very good answer to this because For a while, for an English, this is a bad thing to say for an English student, I just wouldn't read kind of anything of any quality whatsoever. The only reason for quite a long time I read any of these like
kind of basically anything that you talk about on your podcast is for the English literature module, no, course, degree. But recently it's been really fun. I've been finding myself enjoying just kind of anything more and more. Like, I want to read, you know, Lord of the Rings and things written, you know, 200 years ago for fun.
I mean, Lord of the Rings wasn't written 200 years ago, but yeah, that's, I know. Okay.
I used the word "and" in there, but I always think about it as being written 200 years ago, but it wasn't.
No, not written.
Yeah. It's because I haven't seen that movie Tolkien.
It's not very good.
Yeah. And but so the answer's been turning around. I've been reading that, and more and more and more unwilling to read trash. Just can't stand it anymore. Yeah, which is kind of sad. Like, it was such a big part of my identity for so long.
That is.
I always feel like, obviously, you can't blanket an entire genre because there's always the standouts of each genre. But I think generally I don't like books where relationships are like the main plot or like the main source of antagonism or emotion. Like, I think I prefer books that have something wider that then within it a relationship might form, or like it might have an organic thing produced from it. But I don't like it where it's like, here's our main character and the reason that their motives for the book is because of X person or Y person, but in a romantic sense. I just don't find it that interesting. Obviously there is exceptions. You could say like Call Me by Your Name. It's very much like relationship set, but say like It Ends With Us, I don't judge people for reading it because I think that's just like snobbery, book snobbery, which I feel like is more a reflection on the person judging than a reflection on the person reading. But I just don't find that particularly interesting. Like, it just doesn't grab my attention.
Can I just say, with that example, it's not actually about relationships. Like, it's not a romance book.
Well, I mean it in like romance. I just mean it as like where the like setup for the action comes from, like those kind of personal relationships.
Yeah.
I did maybe pick a bad example, but say so, like what I've been struggling with. I'll give you the sun. I always think I say it wrong, is like the and I know it's a YA book, so perhaps that is also a bad example, but like the teen melodrama about like relationships, like who's gone off with who, and like I just find it a bit dull. But as I say, it's not like, it's not a blanket ban, but it's just not, if I was in a bookshop, it's not like the first genre I'd head towards.
That makes sense.
That's the best example. Like, I'd have for someone to know me and say, I know that this is this genre, but I think you'll really like it, for me to kind of read it, basically. Yeah. I wouldn't go out of my own way to find books like it. But then maybe I'm missing out on loads of good stuff. Silence. Have I offended anyone?
Don't like, so I'm like, that's interesting. Not like nothing against you, but I'm kind of like, yeah, but I'll give you a son. They have all the like stuff with the mum and the art school things and like the siblings relationship, you know. But then, yeah, I don't know, it's got such a place in my heart, so like, I don't know, I get you.
Oh, that's so funny.
Ella, is it your turn?
It is my turn. I would say that I steer away from kind of crime and thriller type fiction. I don't really, for me personally, I don't get it. Like, I guess Kerry and I were talking, like, it's not really, not true crime, but Kerry and I were speaking a little bit about like kind of true crimey stuff in the Goodness episode. But I feel like, I don't know, there's something about, like, who's that guy? Ian, what's his face, writes loads of kind of crime.
Oh, Ian Rankin.
Yeah, no, that is it.
And like there's just no desire in me at all to ever read anything. And I think, I don't know whether a lot of it comes down to I feel like they're very formulaic in my head, to the point where I don't think I'd get any enjoyment out of it because I would know exactly what was happening and what sort of things would have to line up for it to come out. And I think I much prefer, I would still kind of watch some of these kind of crime and thrillery type things, like the Harlan Coben adaptations on Netflix, like Stay and Close. I can't remember what they're called, but like I quite enjoyed those because they're quite fun and entertaining. And I think as well, I have to dedicate a lot of time to a book, and I feel like if I don't, I like to be able to, like, with a book, if it's a kind of mystery of sorts, I don't mind a mystery, but like a kind of, because I like being able to figure it out. But with like a crime thriller, I'm like, I don't know. I don't think I'm articulating this.
No, I think it makes sense, especially with you, because you always know what's coming.
Yeah, I was thinking that. You know, when we were watching Shadow and Bone and he was like, oh, I'll see you back here at sundown. I was just like, no, they won't. Turned out, no, they didn't, did they?
No.
No, and I was trying to restrain myself in the old guard, being like, That's going to link to something. That's
like, yeah. I haven't already watched the entire Old God before.
Yeah, but so. I have been a few years. But anyway, so I feel like if there was a really complex kind of like crime thriller, like, okay, then maybe. But a lot of the time it's either so obvious or they just like pull something completely random out of the blue. And it's like, I'd rather watch an episode of Death in Paradise. You know, rather than
surely that's the most predictable thing ever.
I feel like there's something different about it being in TV form versus book form.
Mm-hmm.
And the book form isn't the one for that sort of thing.
More consumable.
But that was a really long ramble. I meant to be quite short because I know we've been rambling for a long time, but that was really long. So Kerry, tell us what genre you won't read.
I made a list of things I won't read.
Anything that on my Goodreads?
No, I feel bad. No, you. Yeah. Okay. Right. Right. Hyped up books. Well, yeah. I will read them, but it takes me a while because it's that whole thing of me as a teenager being like, I want to be edgy and different. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to read them. But I'm getting over myself slowly. Fantasy. Not all fantasy books, but like that's a genre I'd least read.
Mm-hmm.
Long books. Also, more like Wattpad romance style books, which I know is hypocritical because like it ends with us and that. But like, I don't really fancy reading Beth O'Leary because I get what you were saying, George, about when romance is the essential like driving force and their motives. Like, I now prefer it when it's more story with romance in it because I don't just want to read like one relationship on a bit deeper. And an example of this is like, I wouldn't read The Love Hypothesis, like, especially the cover that just really puts me off. I don't want to do it.
Wait, I don't know this cover. I'm gonna have to Google what you're talking.
It's not good. It's like,
is that the one with the apprentice?
Yeah,
would have made it, like they would have had a task to design a book cover, design a book, and they would come up with the love. Actually, they wouldn't.
What's this one? Is it a square root symbol? And there's one person leaning against it.
I have the love hypothesis thing ingrained in my mind.
Okay, I get your answer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, again, don't judge anyone for that, but just. Yeah, I'm moving away. I think moving away from the kind of books that I would have read when I was younger.
And I guess kind of piggybacking off of that, I feel like, you know, the books that are all over like Book Talk. You know, when you go into Waterstones, you see a Book Talk table. I'm like, no, I don't have any desire to read any of those.
It actually
puts me off as well. I'm like, no, thank you. Anyway, sorry, carry on with your list.
No, that's it. You go. Are you on? Yeah,
that was a good list.
We've got a good mix of things that we don't read. Okay, the next question is, who do you think is the greatest living writer/writer of our times?
I'm so excited to hear what you guys are going to say.
So we'll start with Georgina.
Well, this is basically an impossible question. I think that you can only obviously give a subjective answer, because that is the joy of books, is that everyone gets something different from them and everyone's taste is different, because obviously if everyone likes the same thing, then just bookshops would just be filled of one genre or whatever, one writer. I think perhaps my closest I can get to an objective answer is maybe Margaret Atwood. I think she's a very important writer. Her critical stuff, as well as her novels, obviously Handmaid's Tale and America, are mirrors of each other, seemingly. But personally, I would go for Neil Gaiman for me, because he's written a lot of stuff, a lot that has been, like, even when I wasn't aware it was him, it was important, or like, I enjoyed when I was growing up, like Stardust especially, I think is an example. But he's also done Doctor Who episodes, which I didn't know that they were him, but episodes I've really enjoyed. And Good Omens, like his partnership with Terry Pratchett, obviously. I think with Terry Pratchett no longer being with us, I feel like I can't say Terry Pratchett. But Neverwhere, I absolutely enjoyed. And not that I've read American Gods, but I think it looks very fun. And not that I've watched Coraline, but because I'm too scared of watching it. But that also looks good. And like, being a big Hellblazer / Constantine fan, him being responsible for the Hellblazer comics is another big tick in his name. And also the fact that he answers people's questions on Tumblr every day, like, what a king. So yeah, my very subjective answer is Neil Gaiman.
That's a really good answer. I support that.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, blessed.
Ella's pulling a face.
I'm so sorry, because I've tried really hard and I don't have a single answer for this question.
That's okay,
because it's not as in I have so many people that I can't choose. I can't think of anyone. I don't have opinion that wouldn't be someone else's opinion.
That's all right.
Ether and like reciting as my own in an uninformed way. I don't know. I don't really. I was about to say I don't care. I do care, but at the same time, I don't.
Nodded along to Margaret Atwood, so we can say that you have feelings, but that's not a horrific point to make.
No, not George. That is correct, and I respected that point. I was thinking, like, I don't know, anyone that's written a seminal work, probably I would pick, but I don't know who. And also that probably I would probably want to talk about people in the past, if that makes sense, as well. So not living writers. But yeah, sort of anyone who's done something really clever that's influenced, you know, the entire genre, or a mode of criticism as well. Often, like, really cool academic critics, people have also written novels or whatever. So, but yeah, the answer is...
valid.
What's your answer, Kerry?
Okay, I did a lot of research on this, and the general consensus is probably Salman Rushdie. Fair enough, I agree. Yeah. I personally think Sally Rooney, and I think that she should get a lot more credit, because, I mean, she's in a way started a whole new genre. I love her writing style, and I just think she makes sense for the 21st century. That's just how we write nowadays, or like what is exciting about writing nowadays. But because we have two whole episodes about her, which you should go and watch or listen to, I decided to go with Isabel Allende, because I think she is incredible outside of her work. I mean, her actual work is also wonderful, and I recommend The Soul of a Woman, which is, it's nonfiction. It's kind of like Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie's We Should All Be Feminists, or like Dear Juelle, that kind of thing. I'm quite sure, really good. And I think that she's just so instrumental in, well, feminism, basically. And she does a lot of charity work as well. She's just amazing. But I just love that genre so much. And she's one of the only female writers, really, with the whole like Latin American boom of magic realism in like what, 70s, 80s. Kind of like, the only female at the forefront of that. And she's written so many good things, like House of Spirits, like Violetta. So I recommend her work and think she should be up there.
I've never read anything by her, but I think I will.
Yeah, she's really cool. Yeah. She is, her dad, Mr. Allende, he was the president of Chile, and it was like super rough because he got assassinated and things. I was doing it all at A-level. It was interesting. That she, like, it's a weird thing that she lived in such a historical moment, and then is this amazing writer as well.
I realised I read one of her books. I read The City of the Beasts. They're at my secondary, they did a book club, which it was only for year 7s to 9s, but I for some reason was like a leader in it because I was a nerd. And they just gave free books and were like, you can read this. And I totally wasn't going to have one, but I took it home with me anyway. And I remember absolutely loving that book.
Really?
Like, a lot. Like, it was really, really good. So I'll definitely have to check more of her stuff out, because that is more like young fiction, right, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah. I think she pretty much writes across like loads of genres. She's quite like lithic, so. Ella, what's your answer?
I don't know, because I was also really struggling, because I feel like I haven't read enough kind of more recent, I just haven't read enough, so I haven't read enough more kind of recent works. I feel like I'm not in the loop with the literary circles as they are at the moment right now, which I should probably, you know, get up to scratch on, considering the career I wish to have post-university. But the first person who popped into my head was Sally Rooney. And I feel like a lot of people put her down because I think they're like, oh, she just writes books about Irish people in relationships. Which, yeah, she does, but there's more to it than that. She's also a very political writer, but also I think she manages to capture modern life and modern thinking. And like you say, she's almost kind of carved her own space and her own genre by mixing old ways of doing things and new ways of doing things. Like, she's got a little bit of kind of like the Joycean way of Joycean, I don't even know if that's a term, but that kind of Joycean Irishy kind of writing. And okay, yeah, I didn't like that final chapter of Useful World, Where Are You?
Let's not bring it up again.
Everyone has flaws. And I've never not liked and not been interested by something she writes about. And I think a lot of people kind of our generation can kind of understand and see themselves and people they know in what she writes and how she writes. But I also agree with the whole Margaret Atwood, Neil Gaiman, Isabel Allende. There are so many amazing writers out there. So I'm glad that this was a hard thing for us all to pick. Because if it was easy, then I'd be worried for the state of literature and the state of...
Well said, Ella.
So. Oh, and actually worth mentioning, Toni Morrison was a popular answer as well.
Yeah.
And she writes really interestingly on race. Some of her critical stuff about race, especially in America, is really, really interesting. And I looked at some of that in Germany last year, so she also kind of adds into the critical debates really astutely.
And Kazuo Ishiguro.
Yes. Yeah, oh, that's actually a really good shout.
Yeah.
Ishiguro, whatever I said.
Yeah. I think, yeah, he's actually up there, I think, with, say, like, Salman Rushdie, I think.
Yeah.
Definitely. And especially the way he's going with kind of bringing in kind of all this AI stuff into
at
the moment is, really interesting.
Remains of the Day was actually one of the favourite books I read last year. And I was so happy that I got to write an essay on it, which I quoted Neil Gaiman in, because Neil Gaiman interviewed Kazuo Ishiguro, and I was like, I don't care, I am putting this quote in my essay because I want a reference in the bibliography entry that says Neil Gaiman.
I love that.
I'd also say I don't want to say Richard Powers is the writer of a generation, because he isn't, and there's some things that he doesn't do nearly well enough in, his big breakup book, The Overstory, which I'm doing for my dissertation, there's just no presence of Indigenous people, despite the fact that a lot of what he's talking about is, owes its existence to Indigenous culture. But anyway, but what he has done is he's representative of a big shift at the moment to incorporate the environment and living sustainably into novels at the moment, which I am hoping might become a more popular type of genre or whatever as we go through, and basically anything that tries to write about the more than human experience. I would hope for like more books like those.
I'm sure they will be.
There's cool ones out there already.
On a side note, that's what I like about Nick Mulvey's music.
Oh my god, yeah. I loved the article you wrote about him. It was really cool.
Self plug there. Just because that felt natural, but it's a song. I shouldn't have said anything.
Are we ready for our final question?
I think so.
Bye.
Okay, the last question is, how do you feel about non-prose books, and can you give a recommendation? And I said for this question, anything like there's poetry, play, or even books that are, I gave the example of like Daisy Jones and the Six, where it's a transcript. So this is very broad. So Ella, how do you feel about them?
Yeah, interesting question. Nostalgic probably the most, because I don't read a lot of them apart from for my English literature degree. So kind of play, Shakespeare plays or any sorts of more modernism plays is probably 20th century plays, ones that I've read quite a lot, or epic poems, stuff like that, are all things I've read for school, and all things I've really enjoyed thinking about for school, because they represent quite a different way of writing and storytelling. I wouldn't read them usually outside, just for fun, but read the introduction or the first 10 pages of Solar Bones recently. I can't remember who wrote that, but the whole book is about sort of thinking about your connection to place and, where you live and the landscape around you, and the language is prose, but it's quite experimental. There's only like one full stop in the entire novel, apparently. And that goes really well. He's experimenting essentially with what you have to think about in order to, to experience place, like sound and the people you live around and, feeling and nature and everything like that. And he uses language in a similarly experimental way in the first 10 pages. But also this is a weird thing to say, but the only thing
that has made me consider if there was a modern, like, epic poem produced, I would now consider reading it solely because Kerry wrote a poem called The Story of Us. And I thought the prose was so beautiful, and the way it, like, it told a story, but in, like, language that was really beautiful. And I was like, I would actually read something that was longer. So, yeah, there you go.
Well, my answer is actually related to your wish, Ella Metcalf. Primarily, I thought I'm actually quite a traditional reader, so I'm not that experimental with my texts. And at first I thought, oh, maybe I could say Dear Idjueli, as it's kind of straddles like a grey area of form, but it doesn't strictly answer the question. But then I realised, In Parenthesis by David Jones, which is a epic poem that a World War One soldier wrote, and it had very little attention to it, but T.S. Eliot praised David Jones as, like, one of the finest writers of that generation. And it's really visceral and at the same time, like, fantastical. Like, it incorporates a lot of Welsh mythology into it, and it's just always captured my imagination. And I feel like if I didn't write about what I wrote my diss on, then it would have easily served as my second choice, because it's just fascinating, and it's like full book length. Like, it's like, I know you can't see this, listeners, but maybe an inch thick. And it can be very fragmented, but then very ordered. And I feel like he really captures the voices that were around him, because he wasn't like a captain or a colonel, or like, he was just a kind of footman, for want of a word, which a lot of the World War One poetry came from perspectives of higher class or higher positions within the British Army, whereas David Jones very much was just your everyday soldier. So I think it captures a different side of things as well. So I think that's something I would recommend for people to read, that is in a very different form. And also he wrote it during the war, but he only published it in the 30s. So then it also emerged in that kind of modernist peak and fall.
I'll look into that. Very good. I have heard of it, but I've never read any of it. So, very interesting.
Ella, what is your thoughts?
My thoughts? I don't know, there's not much, because I've read, I can't think of any like book length works that I've read that aren't really typically in prose, because I guess Girl, Woman, Other and things like that kind of experiment with form a little bit.
Well, I'd say Girl, Woman, Other counts.
Yeah, I don't want to
talk about that. Essentially, that's a whole novel in verse.
It is, yeah. And there's a novel called A Song for Ella Gray by David Almond, which is kind of flicks between poetry and prose, which is really interesting, and it's very lyrical and very beautiful. Also, I love a good like 20th century play. Give me anything by Samuel Beckett.
Oh, wait, Tennessee we got Williams. It.
I know that they're quite different playwrights, but obsessed with Waiting for Godot. From the moment I first saw like just a small production of it, I was obsessed. I love it so much. And anything Tennessee Williams writes.
Yeah.
I love. So
George's grimace.
Wincing.
So I'm a big, yeah, I enjoy 20th century play, because I feel like there are a lot of stuff happened in the 20th century, so there's a lot of fun stuff to say in plays, and I think plays is a really fun way of saying it as well. And then you get the whole added layer when you have different adaptations
of the plays as well. I was going to say stay tuned in a few weeks and you'll be able to hear Kerry and I talk about A Streetcar Named Desire, but that will probably be in series 4.
I'm seeing it on Tuesday, so...
So you'll be able to see it. Yeah, but I'm not seeing it till middle of April.
What place is that at? Again, is it the Almeida?
This extended run, they've moved it to Phoenix.
Oh, that's nice theatre.
Very good. So, yeah, I would say a good old play. What about you, Kerry?
I really, really love experimental works. I don't like Ulysses, I don't want to read that. But loads of stuff. Like, I think I mentioned on another What We've Been Consuming, Somebody Loves You by Mona Arshie, which is not quite a narrative verse, but it's very poetic and lyrical. It's really beautiful. And I love plays, not so much reading them, because I find it hard to read it without analysing it, maybe, or having seen it. Like, I love doing in spectacles in school. That was super fun. And Streetcar, obviously. But I do love a lot of poetry. And I love The Sun and Her Flowers by Rupi Kaur. That's my favourite right now. That's so beautiful. I'm very much up for anything that's a bit more going crazy, not just doing straight prose. But I hate when it's like super, super lit fit. Like, I read, I think it was called The Milkman. I can't remember who it's by. But it was...
I've heard of that one.
Same.
Yeah, because it...
That was on Irish Stories.
Yeah, because it won the Booker Prize, I think. Maybe, like, a couple of years ago. And that was very, like, stream of consciousness. No characters were named. And it was too much.
I haven't read all of it, but I've read an extract from it that was further reading, and I enjoyed it.
I would enjoy an extract, but reading the entire book of it is it's effort.
Yeah, okay, maybe I'll stick to the extract.
That's it for book club then.
That's it. To close off the episode, we'll just quickly do some blonde moments. We need to re-record it with the do-do. any takers for who wants to go first? Do you want Kerry and I to go first? You guys can have a minute.
I'll go first.
Okay,
George,
because
my one.
My blonde moment. It's to Kerry Jones and Ella Gojic, because one, just always impressed by your podcast output, but the specific blonde moment for this week is one, had time of my life watching Shadow and Bones premiere. I'm going to extend this to Ella Metcalf, since you're kind of blonde as well.
Thank you.
And then, yeah, just these questions, had a lovely think about these questions. And I've missed discussing books nerdily with people. So you give me a lovely Saturday, late morning to early afternoon. And my blonde moments is to mainly, and Ella, but primarily our hosts, because they are our hosts.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having us. It's been such a cool conversation.
Thanks for coming. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, thanks for agreeing to chat with us.
I could go next.
Go for it.
I was worried George was going to do this, so glad. I picked Susie Wolf, who is like the lady in F1, well, just all kind of like formally, like whatever, because she has been announced as the new managing director of the F1 Academy, and she's gonna set up this whole female series, which is so cool because, like, where are the women, you know? So I was like, yeah. And she also was team principal and then CEO in Formula E. She was the first woman to take part in an F1 race weekend in 22 years. And, like, she's driven an F3 as well. So she's so, so cool. She's done so much stuff. I'm so looking forward to seeing what she does now as managing director. So I'm like, yeah.
She's a cool, cool woman.
Mm-hmm. She sounds like a cool woman.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm. My bronze moment this week goes to Helen Glover, who is one of the most decorated British rowers ever. And as I was walking down the high street this morning, getting some fresh air, walked past the Cornish shop, you know, the one with all the kind of the touristy kind of Cornish shop. Mm-hmm. And they had a whole little display of, like, great Cornish women. And Helen was there. And then I was like, I've recognised her. So I Googled her. Obviously recognise her from the Olympics and the rowing. Mm-hmm. And she's also married to Steve Backshall, which I didn't realise.
I know this?
Yeah.
But, you know, but she's a two-time Olympic rowing champion. She stopped for a bit, had twins, but now she's getting back into rowing and she's set up different things to try and get more young people into rowing and kind of improving their fitness and stuff. And I was like, we love to see women thriving in their sports.
We do.
And enjoying it. So, and she's Cornish. She was born in Penzance and grew up in Cornwall. I don't think she lives in Cornwall anymore. But so it goes to her.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you walked past the shop and saw her in it as a start bit, but I was like,
no, just saw a picture of her face in the window, but that would have been pretty cool if I did see her. So yeah, to have any famous sightings in Cornwall. Even though Will and Kate were here a few weeks ago and I was on campus so rather than anyway.
Devastated, I missed him.
Maybe Helen Skelton.
Iconic, what a woman.
But yeah, I don't know. She
carry on.
I just like watching her speak. She's just quite cool. She's seems kind of humble and down to earth, but really good. She just is so charismatic to watch on screen. Obviously has done loads of cool things, you know, was a Blue Peter presenter and is part of Country File and has a show on BBC Radio and did Strictly, and she's just often it obviously it's quite difficult for women to break into like hostessing on TV, and she does a very good job of it. She does.
Okay. Two Helens, two Ellas, two Helens.
Well, crazy. Wow.
All the duplicates.
So Ella, what are we going to be back with next week?
Next week, I believe that we're going to delve into some children's literature. I'm going to take a step back into the past, probably talking about books we read as children, books, just children's literature in general that we're reading now as adults. It should be quite fun and exciting. But thank you for listening to today's book club episode. We hope you've enjoyed it. All the books and everything will be listed on our blog, so check that out if you want recommendations or anti-recommendations. And thank you, Ella and George, for joining us.
Thank you. Tune in next week.
Thanks for listening to
Tea O'Clock with Keller.
See you next time.